Hey everyone, welcome back. We're going to be diving into a book that's been really sticking with me lately, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that one.
Have you read it?
I have. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating stuff.
It really is, and today we're going to be doing a deep dive into it. I think some of the connections he makes are pretty surprising.
Yeah, he's a really insightful thinker.
So for anyone who hasn't read it yet, it's all about Gen Z and the current mental health landscape.
Right, and how it's so different from previous generations.
Exactly. And he even uses this analogy of Gen Z growing up as if they were raised on Mars.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It's like their childhood is so different from anything we've ever seen.
Yeah, with technology and social media being such a dominant force.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder how that affects their development.
Like, how does growing up on Mars shape their brains differently?
That's a really good question, and that's something he digs into pretty deeply in the book.
He talks about this concept of an experience expectant brain.
Yeah, what is that exactly?
Basically, it means that young brains need certain real-world experiences in order to develop properly.
Makes sense.
But what happens when those experiences are replaced with, you know, endless scrolling on TikTok or Instagram?
Right, like are we depriving them of something essential?
That's exactly what Haidt argues. He says it's like depriving the brain of essential nutrients. And he points to this dramatic increase in anxiety, depression, self-harm, all these mental health issues that we're seeing in Gen Z.
Yeah, and it's really alarming when you look at this statistic.
Because like something shifted in the early 2010s.
And it's not a coincidence that it coincides with the rise of smartphones.
Exactly. He even pinpoints the exact year, 2012, when anxiety rates really started to climb.
And that's right around when smartphones became ubiquitous among teenagers.
Right. It's like this perfect storm of factors all converging at the same time.
So we've got the technology piece, but Haidt also talks about how parenting has changed too, right?
Yeah, he calls it overprotective parenting.
Oh yeah, what is that again?
It's this idea that parents are so focused on shielding their kids from discomfort or risk that they actually end up hindering their development.
Like they're trying to pave a smooth path, but it ends up backfiring.
Exactly. He uses this term experience blocker, which I think is so insightful.
It is. It's like we're preventing them from learning how to deal with the bumps in the road.
Yeah. Think about it. You learn to ride a bike by falling down a few times, right?
And that's how you build resilience.
Exactly. So he's saying that this overprotective parenting combined with this phone-based childhood is creating a perfect storm for mental health struggles.
Makes total sense.
Mm.
But he doesn't stop there, right? He goes on to outline these four foundational harms that are impacting this generation.
Right. And these harms are all interconnected.
Okay, let's break those down because I think this is where things get really interesting.
Okay, so the first one is social deprivation. Kids just aren't getting enough face-to-face interaction.
Right. They're spending more time online than they are in person.
Exactly. And then there's sleep deprivation.
Yeah. That's a big one because who can resist scrolling on their phone late at night?
Seriously. And he talks about the blue light emitted from screens and how it disrupts sleep patterns, which are so important for development.
I know. I'm definitely guilty of that. What are the other two harms?
So the third one is attention fragmentation. You know that feeling when you can't focus on anything for more than a few minutes?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, he argues that the constant notifications, the endless stream of information, it's actually rewiring our brains and making it harder to concentrate and think deeply.
And the fourth one is addiction.
Yes, right? Addiction to social media, to video games, online pornography, all of it.
And it's interesting how he connects all four of these harms back to that Mars analogy, like, there are all these unintended consequences of growing up in this hyper-connected world.
It really is a different world.
It's making me rethink my whole relationship with technology and parenting and everything.
Well, you're in for a ride because he gets even deeper into it in the next part.
Yeah, we have a lot more to unpack, so stay tuned for part two of our deep dive into The Anxious Generation. Okay, so we're back. And, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm just thinking about all the young people in my own life, like my nieces and nephews, friends, kids, and how this whole phone-based childhood is really affecting them.
Yeah, it's hard not to think about it, right? It's everywhere you look.
It really is. And, you know, Haidt does such a good job of making you see the world through their eyes.
He really does.
And one of the things that stuck with me was how these foundational harms don't affect boys and girls in the same way.
Right. They kind of have different paths, but both paths are leading to some pretty serious issues.
Oh, yeah. I remember he said something about girls being caught in a trap.
He did, yeah. It's like they're constantly seeking validation and approval online.
And that makes sense because we talked about how girls are more motivated by connection and belonging.
Exactly, that communion drive.
Right. So they're pouring all this energy into these platforms. But the nature of social media makes it really hard to find genuine connection.
Because it's also curated and filtered, right?
Exactly. It's like this constant cycle of comparison and feeling like you're not enough.
And he even cites research showing that girls are more sensitive to visual comparisons.
Which is why platforms like Instagram and TikTok can be so damaging.
Exactly, because they're all about appearances.
And it's not just about body image issues either. He talks about the cyberbullying, the sexualization, all the darker sides of social media that girls are more vulnerable to.
Right, it's like a whole other level of pressure.
So if girls are getting caught in this trap, what's happening with boys?
Well, Haidt suggests that they're kind of retreating into virtual worlds.
Like video games and online pornography.
Exactly, those immersive digital spaces where they can escape from the real world.
I've definitely seen that with some of the teenage boys I know. They just disappear into their screens for hours.
And while there can be some benefits to gaming, like improved problem-solving skills or hand-eye coordination, Haidt is worried about the excessive time they're spending in these virtual realms.
Because they're missing out on real-world experiences.
Exactly. He even talks about this phenomenon of failure to launch, where young men are struggling to transition into adulthood.
Failure to launch? That's pretty intense. What does that look like?
Like they're having trouble finding jobs, forming relationships, taking on responsibilities. It's like they're stuck in a perpetual adolescence.
Yeah, I guess that ties back into the whole experience expectant brain idea.
Exactly. If they're not getting those real world experiences, their brains aren't developing the way they should.
It's kind of sad when you think about it.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that Haidt suggests boys are starting to exhibit some of the same mental health trends as girls.
Yeah, like anxiety, depression, self-harm, things that used to be more prevalent in girls.
So it's like these separate paths are starting to converge.
In a way, yeah. Even though boys and girls are experiencing this phone-based childhood differently, they're both facing similar struggles.
Which is really concerning. But, you know, speaking of different experiences, Haidt also talks about this whole spiritual dimension of the mental health crisis, and I'm really curious to hear more about that.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating part of the book. So when he talks about spiritual, he's not necessarily talking about religion.
Okay, so what does he mean?
He's talking about that sense of meaning and purpose, that connection to something larger than yourself.
Like feeling connected to nature or art or something bigger than your everyday worries.
Exactly. And he argues that the way we're raising kids today with all the self-focus and social comparison is actually preventing them from experiencing this kind of transcendence.
He calls it spiritual degradation.
Yeah, he does. And it's they're so caught up in their own little worlds that they're missing out on the bigger picture.
And I can see how that could lead to feelings of emptiness and dissatisfaction.
Totally.
Yeah.
Even if they seem to have it all on the surface.
So what's the solution? How do we combat this spiritual degradation?
Well, he talks about the importance of shared sacredness rituals, awe in nature. He even suggests 6 specific spiritual practices that can help us reconnect with something larger than ourselves.
Okay. I'm really intrigued. What are these practices?
I don't want to spoil all the surprises. You'll have to read the book for that. But he talks about things like meditation, spending time in nature, engaging in acts of service, cultivating gratitude.
So basically, things that help us shift our focus outward.
Exactly. Away from all that self-scrutiny and comparison.
It's like we need to find a way to balance this hyper-individualistic, tech-driven world with something more grounding and meaningful.
You got it. And that's what makes the anxious generation so thought-provoking. It's not just a diagnosis of the problem, it's a call to action.
Well, I'm definitely feeling inspired to make some changes in my own life after hearing all of this. And I'm really eager to hear what he has to say about the bigger picture solutions. Like, what can we do as a society to address these harms and help young people thrive?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. He's got some pretty bold ideas about everything from government regulation to education reform to parenting strategies.
Okay, now I'm hooked. I can't wait to dive into those solutions in part 3. Okay, so we're back and ready to tackle the big question. What can we actually do about all this?
Mm.
You know, after diving into all those foundational harms and the impact on boys and girls, it's kind of like, is there any hope?
Well, that's the thing about hate. He doesn't just leave you with this grim diagnosis, right? He actually offers a whole bunch of solutions.
Okay, good, because I was starting to feel a little bit hopeless
Oh,
there.
yeah, I get it. But he actually dedicates a whole section of the book to solutions, and some of them are pretty radical.
Okay, well, let's hear it because I'm ready for some action.
Okay, well, let's start with the tech companies themselves, right? I mean, they're the ones creating these platforms.
Yeah, do they have any responsibility in all of this?
He definitely thinks so. He talks about how these companies are using these sophisticated algorithms and dev features to basically keep us hooked.
You mean like those endless feeds that just keep you scrolling and scrolling?
Exactly. Or those notifications that pop up at just the right moment to grab your attention.
Yeah, those are the worst.
And he calls these dark patterns because they exploit our vulnerabilities and make it really hard to resist.
It's like they're designed to be addictive.
That's exactly his point.
Yeah.
And he argues that we need more regulation to protect users, especially young people, from these manipulative tactics.
So, like, what kind of regulations is he talking about?
Well, he even suggests raising the age of internet adulthood,
What does that mean?
like moving the age for social media accounts from 13 to 16.
Wow, 16. That's a big jump.
It is, but he makes a compelling case. He talks about how teenagers' brains are still developing and they're just not equipped to handle the complexities of social media.
And those platforms can really amplify things like social comparison and anxiety, especially for girls.
Exactly. So he's saying we need to give them more time to mature before we unleash them into the wilds of the internet.
I can get behind that, but it sounds like a tough sell.
Yeah, it would definitely be controversial. But he also challenges governments to step up and create policies that protect children in the digital age.
So, what kind of policies?
Well, he talks about strengthening privacy laws, making it harder for companies to collect and monetize data on young users. He also suggests exploring ways to limit the use of those addictive design features we talked about.
Okay, so that's the tech side of things. What about the real world? Can we do anything to counter those harms outside of the digital space?
Absolutely. And this is where I think his solutions get really interesting. He talks a lot about the importance of play, like real unstructured free play.
Yeah, just letting kids be kids.
Exactly. And how it's crucial for developing social skills, resilience, creativity, all those good things.
Makes sense, but it seems like kids have so much less free time these days.
He argues that we've become way too risk averse as a society and we need to loosen the reins a bit.
Like, let them scrape their knees once in a while.
Exactly. Let them experience the world without constantly hovering over them.
I like that because I think a lot of parents are afraid to let their kids out of their sight these days.
He gets that, and he suggests some interesting ideas like narrowing neglect laws to give parents more confidence in letting their kids play
Oh,
unsupervised.
that's interesting. So it's not just about parents changing their behavior, it's about changing the laws too.
Right. And he also talks about encouraging schools to prioritize recess and unstructured playtime and designing public spaces that are more child-friendly.
So, like building more playgrounds and parks.
Exactly. It's about creating a culture where play is valued and encouraged, not seen as a waste of time.
Okay, so we've talked about tech companies and parents, but what about schools? They obviously play a huge role in this too.
Absolutely. And Haight has some strong opinions about education. He's a big proponent of phone-free schools.
Meaning no phones allowed at all?
Yeah, like students are required to keep their phones off and out of sight during the school day.
I can imagine that would be a tough sell for some teenagers.
Oh, for sure. But he points to schools that have successfully implemented these policies, and they've seen some really positive results. Less distraction, more social interaction, greater focus on learning.
So it actually works.
It seems to, and it makes sense, right? If you're not constantly checking your phone, you're more likely to be present and engaged in what's happening around you.
Yeah, it's like we need to relearn how to function without our devices.
Exactly. And it's not just about banning phones. He also talks about making schools more playful,
Playful, what does that mean?
like incorporating more play-based learning activities. And he loves the idea of let grow play clubs, where kids have designated times during the school day for unstructured free
I
play.
love that. It's like giving them permission to just be kids.
Exactly. And he even suggests bringing back more vocational training in schools.
Really? Why is that?
He argues that it can provide a more hands-on, real-world learning experience that can be really beneficial for kids who aren't thriving in traditional academic settings.
So it's about giving them options and recognizing that not everyone is cut out for college.
Right. It's about helping them find a path that's meaningful for them.
Okay, so we've talked about tech companies, government schools, that's a lot. But ultimately, it all comes back to parents, right?
It does. He acknowledges that parenting in the digital age is incredibly challenging. But he also argues that parents have more power than they think.
I think a lot of parents feel overwhelmed and helpless, like they're fighting a losing battle.
He gets that, but he encourages parents to start by examining their own relationship with technology and making adjustments where needed.
Like practicing what you preach.
Exactly. And he offers some practical tips, like setting screen time limits, creating device-free zones in the house, prioritizing real-world activities.
So basically setting boundaries and being intentional about how we use technology.
Right. And he also encourages parents to resist the urge to overprotect their kids.
Right.
You know, give them the space to make mistakes and learn from their own experiences.
Which is hard, but so important.
It is. It's about building resilience and fostering independence, which are essential skills for navigating life.
And he reminds parents that they don't have to do this alone, right?
Right. He encourages them to connect with other parents, share strategies, advocate for change in their communities.
Yes, it takes a village.
Exactly. We all have a role to play in creating a healthier environment for the next generation, and I think that's the ultimate message of the anxious generation.
It's a call to action for all of us.
It is parents, educators, policymakers, tech companies, everyone. It's about recognizing the challenges facing young people and working together to create a world where they can thrive.
And that's a wrap on our deep dive into the anxious generation.
Hope you enjoyed it.
We hope you found this conversation insightful and thought-provoking. And if you're interested in exploring these ideas further, we highly recommend checking out the book. Until next time.